Hey everyone, just want to encourage you to find us on your listening platform and give us a rating. Anywhere you listen to that has a rating system, go on over and give us a rating and maybe leave us a review. Let us know your thoughts. These ratings really do help. Thank you so much for listening. On to this week's episode.
Yo, guys.
Yo, Rolando.
Hello.
So I have a question for you. At what point do you think you give up on trying to survive, like, a really, really high-stakes survival situation?
Okay, so I'm in a high-stakes survival situation. At what point do I give up on trying to survive?
Yeah, like, what's your point of, like, giving up? Right? Like, let's say, like, a zombie apocalypse is a typical example, right?
Mm.
Like, would you want to survive a zombie apocalypse and be part of that new world order? The Last of Us.
Or, like, even Mad Max or something. Not zombie apocalypse.
Oh, Mad Max. Yeah, perfect. That's a great example, too. Would you want to be a part of this new world order where, like, we're just living on whatever gasoline is left and modifying our cars to attack each other, you know?
So I definitely would want to survive. And okay. I would definitely have the will to survive. But knowing my luck, I would not survive.
Interesting. Okay, I know I would not want to survive. I would... Knowing zombie apocalypses, I hope I'm gone in the first wave. Just gone. I don't want to be part of the New World Order.
No desire. Yeah.
But I guess, like, let's bring it back to some reality here, right? Like, let's say you crash, like, your plane crashes, right? And you're, like, on some deserted island somewhere. Or maybe the Andes, even. Like, do you think you have the will to push yourself to survive?
I don't know. I don't think I would, but I would have to be in that situation to truly, truly know the answer to that question.
Wow. Okay. That's a great answer, Nicole. Eddie, what about you?
That's a segue.
Oh, that was just like your actual answer. I'm like, you're thinking, like, what kind of an answer? Like,
I know. It's so...
It's like so wishy-washy.
I know.
Like,
it's
a segue that we could, like, get into.
Political answer. It's like, do you support IVF? Well, I would really have to be in that situation to know if I'm in support of IVF. Like, it's just like, what?
Wow. Just way to poo-poo my segue. I don't think I could survive. Truly, I don't think I could.
Yeah. There's a TV show similar to this idea, right? Yellow Jackets. Yeah. And same thing. It's just like, it was a great novel, Lord of the Flies, similar situation. Mm. Like, would you want to be one of those kids on that island?
I think
island?
The grief would be too much.
I don't know if I could survive in an island full of little boys. I would just be like
that,
no.
That would be weird. Under what circumstance would you, a grown man, be on an island?
Oh, I was assuming I was a little boy also.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so you wouldn't survive with your peers.
I would be Piggy.
I don't
to me,
think like, so.
You think I'd be one of the bad ones, wouldn't you?
I feel like there's a rock that you would throw at some point.
So, if you saw it was either them or you, you'd throw the rock.
No, not at that age group. Because these kids are what, like 13, 14?
Probably like 12.
12, even younger. Yeah, no, I wasn't so assured of myself at 12.
Mm. I'm sorry, are we talking about Lord of the Flies, sir?
No, we're talking about a different kind of survival. Different yes. setting.
Yeah, one based on a true story, by the way, not really a piece of literature or just a made-up story. It is a real story, but we're not going to focus on the real story. We're actually going to focus on the two movie adaptations about it. The first one is from 1993 and is an American film based on Pierce Paul Reed's 1974 book called Alive, and the movie is called Alive. And just last year...
Mm-hmm. Is there an exclamation point in Alive? Is it
no.
Alive? No, it's not. Okay.
It's Alive, : the story of the Andes survivors. Okay. And then there was a brand new Spanish film called The Society of the Snow, which is actually based on a different book by Pablo Verchi.
Actually, by the same name.
Yeah. Society of the Snow, the book. So two films pretty much showing the exact same event. And yet, two completely different films. So we're going to talk about it. We're going to get into it. Stay tuned. I'm Nicole.
I'm Rolando.
And I'm Eddie Z.
And this is Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals.
An original podcast
about unoriginality.
The reason why we're doing this movie is because if you're listening to this when it just came out, in a couple of days the Oscars are happening. This film is nominated for Best International Film, and it's also nominated for Makeup. And nice. I mean, two deserved nominations.
Yeah, two well-deserved nominations for sure. Huh? Yeah. The country that submitted this one is which one? Spain?
This is from Spain. It won Best Picture and Best Director at their Oscars, which are the Goya Awards.
Really?
Yeah, it's the Goya
Awards. I know it's not related to Goya product, but...
Yeah, it's part just me, funny that it's the Goya Award.
Part of me really wishes it was, right? Like Goya sponsor.
Yeah. You get like a can of black beans at your statue.
The Spanish olives, obviously.
The Spanish olives, yes. This film opened at the Venice International Film Festival, but it was out of competition. And it's actually streaming on Netflix. So we did a very similar episode last year where we covered All Quiet on the Western Front. I don't think Eddie was here for that. But that film actually...
No.
Yeah, he was not.
Yeah.
I think last year, All Quiet on the Western Front went on to win a lot of awards at the Oscars. Kind of like I did not expect it to. Society of the Snow does not have as many nominations, but it could be. I think it's in the front running other than Zone of Interest for Best International Film. So we shall see.
Wait, Anatomy of a Fall...
Is not nominated? France did not submit that for their submission. So.
But it got nominated for Best Picture.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the better award, I guess. Like the more coveted one.
Yeah, and then Anatomy of a Fall is going to be walking away with something, I think. But
yeah.
What were you going to ask?
I was going to ask, do they even air Best Foreign Film?
Air as in...
Does that show up in the award ceremony, right? Because like,
I think so.
Awards that happen during the red carpet that they don't really like air.
Yeah, no, these are ones that usually you see.
Mm-hmm, okay.
So these two films, 1993 is Alive, 2023 is Society of the Snow, both based on the Uruguayan Air Force flight, A-71 pretty much disaster that flew into the Andes Mountains on October 13th, 1972. And these people were stranded, essentially, in the mountains for a total of, do you know how many days?
Is it 72?
72, exactly.
I was going to say 76, but okay, 72.
Yeah.
That's crazy. That's more than 2 months. Again, I just don't know if I have that willpower to
It's an insane amount of time. The reason why it went down is because the co-pilot was inexperienced and he was piloting the aircraft. At the time, he mistakenly believed the aircraft had flew over a certain portion, and so he flew in a certain direction, but then he... just got confused and things started to react. And then before he knew it, he actually crashed into a mountain, cutting off their wings and whatnot. Mm. Rugby team was on the flight. Some of them had their parents with them. It was carrying 45 passengers and some crew, 19 of them on the rugby team. 3 crew members and 9 passengers died immediately and several more died. And out of all of them, I think only 13 of them survived. Was it 13 that survived?
I thought it was 6, 17.
17, okay. So this is the event that these two films are pretty much encapsulating. They have pretty core things in common. You know, they all board the flight, on the flight, all blissfully unaware, crash happens. They both depict the crash.
Yes, they both and depict, then, and in similar fashion, actually.
In remarkably similar fashion. Wow.
In both films, the plane kind of breaks into two pieces, tail end and the front portion. It crashes
and we pretty much see,
you know, smashes a lot of legs.
Yes, a lot, some people, I mean, some people get horrifically injured and die because of it. And so we stay with these men primarily and other members of this flight as they struggle to survive. They come to terms with other people dying around them, the fact that they might not be rescued, the fact that they have to go to drastic measures to survive, and then they decide to embark because nobody's going to come find them. They have to go let people know that they are there. So that's usually what these two films encapsulate.
You're really skirting around the drastic measures to survive. Yeah.
Which we will talk about.
And it, so, it was 16. 16. 16. Okay,
16.
16. 16. 16. Yeah, so this is pretty much the basis, the plot of these two movies. But, you know, the core thing here is that this is a story about an Uruguayan flight.
Yes.
And two countries. that made these films. At least one of them speaks Spanish, but and the other one...
predominantly people of South American origins.
Yes. The first film, though, was all American. No, no. And they, like, all had names of these real people, like Nando, Roberto, Antonio. And they're all white. They're played by actors like Ethan Hawke and Vincent Spano, who is just so New Jersey, like Italian. It's crazy. Mm-hmm.
Wait, which one did Vincent Spano play? Was he the captain?
Vincent Spano played Antonio, I believe. He played Antonio.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he's the one that, like, yelled at them for eating the portions of the food because they were like, we're going to be rescued. We'll totally be fine.
Yeah, he had a quite... Everyone in the Alive film was very, very alive with rage.
Yes.
Constantly yelling at each other.
So it's interesting. These two films are remarkably similar because they have to be. They're both depicting, you know, events, how they happened. And yet they tackle things differently. And a lot, and obviously since we're talking about the same film, I figured we would just talk about the events and how the two films kind of, you know, showed them. Do you think that works best for this one?
I think that works for this one.
So Alive begins with the point of view of John Malkovich, by the way.
Oh, that's right. John Malkovich opens the movie and closes.
Yeah, he opens and closes the movie as a memory that he's, like, giving an interview about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's strictly pretty much from his point of view.
Yeah, it's written. It's actually written by the person he's representing, right? So,
yes.
The person who he's representing actually wrote those words, and so he's just reciting them. It is pretty random, though, because I saw this movie when I was a child, right? Like, I don't know what my parents were thinking, but I saw this movie as a kid, and it didn't necessarily... It wasn't like a... I just remember bits and pieces of it, right? And so rewatching this, like, you know, now I know some celebrities like Ethan Hawke and John Malkovich. I'm just like, John Malkovich was in this movie? Gee whiz, I did not know this.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. It's pretty wild that he could pass for Carlitos in this world because... That's the character that he plays, and it's just, it's amazing. I mean, they're a lot of them, like, become character actors too, like, growing up, but when they first started in this movie, they were quite young. So Josh Hamilton, he's a face that you might remember, but I don't know if you, like, know him by name. No,
the only one I really knew was Ethan Hawke and John Malkovich. I don't, and there was
what about Alana Douglas?
The wife of the guy.
Yeah.
She is the other one. I've seen her, like, on Frasier, for example. Like,
what about Josh Lucas? Do you remember Josh Lucas?
I don't...
He died pretty early on, but he was in, like, Sweet Home Alabama.
Nah, I never saw that. Shit.
You don't like rom-coms?
I like some rom-coms. I think we talked about this, but not, like... I'm not, like, a fan of rom-coms in general.
Well, if you remembered anyone in the beginning, you're like, oh, shit, I know him. It was probably him. Mm. So it's interesting, though, because now that we're watching this film 30 years later and obviously comparing it to Society of the Snow, we know a lot of these people. And in Society of the Snow, we don't know anybody. They're all essentially newcomers.
Yeah, no, that was like an intentional thing from the director, J.A. Boyega. Is that his name?
In Society of the Snow? Yeah, J.A. Boyena, I think. Yeah.
Boyena. Yeah, he went out of his way to cast, like, non-famous people in the role. So a lot of these were, like, this is their first roles in a movie, period.
And it's, you know, obviously 30 years later, things are going to be different when you're watching a movie. But it takes away when you recognize these people as movie stars. Mm. I don't know. How did you feel? Not only are they... have names like Carlitos and stuff, and they're all from supposed to be from Uruguay, but they're speaking English. But it's like, Ethan Hawke, what are you doing here? Well, John Malkovich.
I think for me, that might be the bigger thing that kind of sits ill with me, right?
Mm.
The fact that, like, we're representing Uruguayans in this film, and they're all white people. All white people, except for, like, the mechanic, I think, was the only one who looked, like, actually, like, Latino. Right? And of course, this is like, oh, of course, the help. Because not even the pilots looked...
Yeah, seriously.
...looked Latino. It was just the mechanic. I think there was another one in the crew, the team, who looked pretty much like Hispanic. But that would be the bigger thing. And it's funny, because, like, I think prior to the podcast, I could forgive that, because it's like, well, you know, it's a Hollywood movie, so of course we're going to try to make this for American audiences. It's going to be in English. No big deal, right? Like, we just... And when it comes to the movie language, right, like, we forgive that because it's being spoken in the common language, in this case, English, right? That's the language that's being marketed to. So, you know, same thing. Like, and I can't be upset that, like, the new remake of the TV show Revenge is all in Hindi, but because it's an Indian production, right? As much as I want to see it, I don't know Hindi, so I'm going to have to, like, rely on subtitles if I can get my hands on it here in America, right? So I think that's just something that, like, we as moviegoers can, like, forgive. But after doing this podcast for so long as we have, like, that is something that just now irks me, right? Like, it's just, like, you see it, I'm just like, well, these are white people playing, like, at least South Americans and stuff. And it just feels inauthentic. Yeah.
And I think we also, we've the... the privilege of time and options now. We more and more we're seeing people like us on TV and film playing other roles, except of being criminals or lovers or drug dealers. Mm-hmm. And now we're asking for that diversity, or we're asking for that authenticity of some way that we want to see these people or characters. Played by actors that represent closer to the source.
Mm-hmm.
And Hollywood is recognizing that people are going to see stuff like that too.
Yeah.
So it's one of the things is money is still being made, you know, and representation is still happening in some level.
Yeah. Because I don't know if it would have bothered me, for example, it was an English production, which means like they were speaking English. But if they casted actual South Americans to play these roles.
Right? I get that.
But here, since it's a Spanish production, right? And we have actually Spanish speakers and they're speaking the language and stuff. It does hit different. And you do feel a different way when you're like absorbing the film. That is Society of Snow.
For sure. And it's hard because this is such a particular, like this is a real life event and this is pretty horrific. I mean, both movies tend to get relentless after a bit with just like how much are these people going to endure and take.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess for me, this is just a question that I have for you guys in terms of like, does it take you out of it when there's like recognizable movie stars playing these roles? Or does that actually kind of wheel you in a little bit more? It's like, okay, you know, I'm familiar with this actor. I respond to this actor and they're helping me. Because for me, I realized that it's like, oh, a story like this, I need to not know a single person. Mm-hmm. Like, I need to be completely immersed in this world. The movie star qualities of the people in Alive pretty much kept me at a distance from emotionally connecting with it on a deeper level.
Yeah. I'm ambivalent to that. Like, being a celebrity doesn't necessarily take it away from me, right? I know that's something you and I have disagreed with, right? Where you sometimes... No, when someone is too famous for you, you tend to not gravitate towards their performance as a result, right?
Like, it depends on the film, though. Like, if it's Mission Impossible, fuck yeah, Tom Cruise better be in that movie. But if it's, like, something like this, you know...
Or Elvis and you and Tom Hanks, for example, is just like,
well, Tom Hanks just did a terrible job. He did a terrible job.
I disagree with you. I feel like he should have gotten...
Disagree.
We'll forever stand on that hill.
That's my unpopular opinion.
It's just because, like, this is a real story. This is a really hard movie to watch, not necessarily enjoyable. So, like, watching Ethan Hawke do those things, it just is like, oh, yeah, but, you know, I know you, and I know that you're, like, you know, a privileged movie star. Like, I don't know. It just takes away that, like, my suspension of disbelief doesn't happen.
Because Ethan Hawke, to me, isn't that famous.
I've seen him in a lot of movies, so I guess maybe I've seen more Ethan Hawke movies.
You probably have, right? Because, like, I know Ethan Hawke from... I don't even know where I know. He was married to Uma Thurman. That's what I know about him.
That's where you know him from, yeah.
You're ridiculous.
That's great. Didn't you just watch him in the End of the World movie with Julia Roberts?
He was in that movie?
Yes, he played the husband.
Mm-hmm. I confuse him and Kevin Bacon all the time. Oh. Kevin Bacon is in that movie, too,
you know,
right?
What? I kind of see that. They do have similar features.
Yeah, they do.
He's a neighbor.
Also, Christian Slater. I do confuse these three often.
Wow. Okay, Christian Slater... I don't know if I see it.
But. Shockingly, I've seen Christian Slater more than I've seen Ethan Hawke movies.
So another way that these movies differ is that the movie Alive, it pretty much is centered around three main characters, I feel, like Nando, Antonio, and Roberto.
Yes.
even though it's narrated from Carlitos, who ends up being John Malkovich, you know, it's really about these three and how they're mm-hmm. like helming and running the ship of this, you know, strandedness. But Society of the Snow is a little different. It approaches it differently. It's being narrated by a character, Numa. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you spend most of the movie with him. And then, spoiler alert, guys, we're going to be spoiling both movies. So if you intend on watching this, please be warned that from here on out, there will be spoilers.
Yeah, go watch the movie and then come back.
Yeah.
And do come back.
And thanks for coming back. So now here's a spoiler. The narrator of Society of the Snow ends up dying, which
yeah.
is actually a trope that I really like. Like, one of my favorite movies is narrated by a dead person. And it really shows, like, yeah, no, this is using film the way it should be used. Like, mm-hmm. we don't have to watch things in a realistic time frame or something. Like, yeah, a ghost can be, like, the person who's taking us through it. We can transcend time and space.
Yeah.
So.
I thought it was a bold choice, right? When mm-hmm. when I saw the film, A Society of the Snow, and Numa dies, right? And that's, like... For me, that might have been, like, the death that, like, kind of sits with you the most, because a lot of the film was really from his point of view, right? So yeah. even, I think this film handled the death scenes better. They do hit more, but even then, there is still a disconnect between the death scenes and, like, the storyline almost, right? It's not until Numa dies when, like, I finally felt something, right? And he's the last survivor to die before they get rescued. And I was surprised when he died. I was just like, oh, this is an interesting choice, because from there, it seemed like the point of view was going to shift over to Nando, right? Because he starts narrating, like, his point of view, like, what's happening for a little bit, or, like, he's getting mm-hmm. some of his internal thoughts up until the very end when Numa's voice comes back and kind of sums up the ending, which feels so much more haunting, too, with his narration at the end. It ends up becoming a lot creepier, like, and not, like, in a bad way. Like, I think the trauma that these people have gone through, as it's being summarized by Numa, was kind of, I think, also the other emotional part that hit me the most in this film, right? I think the very ending of this film, in which once the characters have been found, and you see the toll that this has taken on their bodies, and, like, the PTSD they're experiencing, like, in the hospital, just from, like, just being able to eat food and, like, being held by, like, nurses and stuff, right? Like, as Numa is narrating, like, that was truly horrible to watch, right? And yeah. it was, like, great, you know, it sat with me.
Yeah, and that whole approach actually lends to an overall colder film. But I mean cold in a good way. I don't mean emotionally cold. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, you feel the atmospheric tension more, I feel like, in Society of the Snow. And that's also from the way that they're shot. I feel like Frank Marshall's approach to Alive was kind of wide. He didn't really go for as many close-ups as the new film did.
Oh, but, really interesting. I felt it was more so the medium. There were a lot more medium shots in
Society of the Snow or Alive?
No, in Alive.
There are.
And in Society of the Snow, we do live more so in both the close-up and then the extreme wide.
Yes. Yes, right? We do. Yeah, to really get the sense of the atmosphere.
The vastness of the situation.
Mm-hmm. And, like, I don't know, overall, it just, like, weather is more prominent of a character in Society of the Snow than it is in Alive. Like, yeah, they're cold, but, like, they look like they're fucking freezing
yeah.
to death, quite literally, in Society of the Snow. And I guess, like, there are certain scenes when they went wide in Alive that was just so clearly, like, oh, this feels very Hollywood backlotty.
It wasn't Hollywood backlotty. It was Canada. Okay.
That's, like, practically a Hollywood backlot. But it fell. It just didn't. It wasn't the most effectively shot, I suppose.
I would agree with you, right? But the director took time and care here to, like, pick an actual... I mean, they went to the actual Andes. They were pretty much close to the actual site of the event
yeah.
where this happened, right? So they really focused on that. And as a result, though, the snow, the mountains, they become their own character. I hate when, like, people say, it's like, oh, the setting is such a character in this movie. In this film, it truly is. And it is the villain of the story. It is truly the antagonist. Like, this is one of those man versus nature movies where, like, nature is very, very much present as, like, your antagonist in this film.
No, absolutely. I think the mark of a really good filmmaker is one who can make you get a sense of, like, the atmosphere. So Akira Kurosawa was really good at that. Like, he if it was hot, like the characters were constantly fanning themselves and sweating. Mm-mm. You know, if it was cold, they were like freezing and there was always snow in the shot. Like, just getting a sense of the location and where people are is such an immersive quality as a filmmaker. And this person just, in Society of the Snow, I really felt like they nailed it a little bit better.
I agree.
Both films open with a crash, but, you know, we get a sense of backstory of these boys in the rugby team. They're a little bit differently because Alive is, you know, we're watching this interview of an elder Carlitos talking about it. It's more so of a slideshow, you know, of them when they're playing their team mm-hmm. and like these pictures of them. But in Society of the Snow, we actually get to live with them for a couple, like for a good 10 or so minutes before they even board the plane. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, you know, you get to actually see some of the relationships. You, like, you see Nando with his family.
We see the captain.
You see some of the dynamics.
Captain, the respect
we
see, that he gets as, like, the leader.
Yeah. And then they both go into the crash, and they both really depict the crash. Do you think it's exploitative at all to show the crash?
No, I mean, okay. No, it's the wrong answer. Yes, but I think both films shockingly were effective in terms of showing the crash, right? Where you need, it's a film, you want some spectacle, right?
Yeah,
so that's okay. And I don't think, I don't know, like, part of me does wish I was in the theater to see Society of the Snow in theaters because that crash is a horrific crash, right? Yeah. And that's not to knock down the 90s version. I think the 90s version actually also did a pretty good job. Like, you know, when you see the seats that kind of like collapse on each other and like kind of snap legs.
Yeah.
You see that. Horrific. But Society of the Snow, like the sound engineering for it is so brutal. Like, you're hearing bones crack and stuff, and you're hearing the screams and the cries. It's horrific. And it borderlines like kind of a horror film, right? Like something you would see in like horror film a little bit. And I think it's effective and stuff, right? But again, the film also does, even during that sequence, like a lot of the film is in that close-up of like you're seeing the actors reacting to like the crash, you know? And
yeah.
Stuff. And it's great. I liked it. Exploitative, sure, but like, you know, I'm in defense of it because you need some spectacle.
Well, I guess if you're going to tell the story about how these people survived the ordeal, then you need to know how they got into the ordeal in the first place. And you kind of need to know the situation and the limitations that they were forced into because of this horrific accident.
Mm-hmm. I think Society of the Snow had a better build-up, though, to the accident, right? Like, the actual plane, the plane ride itself, right? There's, like, kind of, like, almost an impending doom that you feel as the movie progresses. Whereas opposed to Alive, it kind of just felt like it just kind of almost happens.
Yeah, it happens within like the first 5 minutes of the movie, which is crazy because they're both around the same length. But I think Society of the Snow is like 10 minutes longer. And it's those like first 10 minutes that they take to like build relationships with the characters.
And the ending, though, because they took like that ending.
And the ending,
yeah. 10 minute sequence, right? So that's like a whole 20 minutes out of the film that they're not in the snow itself. And yet.
It's true.
I feel like it does give you so much more emotion as a result.
No, absolutely. And definitely, I would agree that in the Society of the Snow, you get a sense of panic and fright. It comes through a little bit more. The anxiety is very prevalent when watching Society of the Snow, where Alive, it's there, but again, it's a little bit more prevalent in Society of the Snow. I wrote in my notes that I feel like Society of the Snow, it's more of like a disaster movie where weather and isolation is the villain, but Alive, in a way, is kind of a human interest film.
Yes, I agree. 1,000,000%. It's really one of the critics that I was reading when they were like reviewing Alive, I forgot who said this, in retrospect, has said it's just like, oh, yeah, it's like watching a Disney film story of these events, right? Like, and it is like there's a scene where Ethan Hawke carries what a survivor is from like the snowstorm. it's just like mind you, it's after day 50 because I remember seeing the marker. So it's just like, well, in what world would he have the strength to carry another person? I've been watching me and Eddie watch a show called Alone, in which these people are just out in the woods foraging for food for like however long they could stay to win $500,000. And these people, like, the amount of weight that you lose in a matter of, like, 2 weeks is, like, the goal diet, in my opinion. But, like, there's just these people don't have the strength to do this. There's no way Ethan Hawke's character would have been able to do this version of Nando, right? It felt too, like, the ordeals they put the characters through in in Alive feel a lot more like Hollywood, right?
Yes.
There's a
yes.
sequence, for example, like when one of them is almost falling off of a cliff, right?
And yes, like yes. Yeah, like, they're oh, like, oh, yeah. yeah.
Right? And it's just like,
yes.
Society that still didn't rely on that. And it feels like cheaper, like when you're in retrospect. It cheapens it a little bit.
Alive almost felt like
you're paying for the spectacle.
Yes, yes. Well, the reason why I wrote it too, because when I was watching Alive, I'm like, wow, there's so much about the character dynamics that this could be a play.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they really could just like focus on the three characters that they truly focus on. And there's just so much. It's more, even though they're, you know, really like showing the location and the atmosphere, it's kind of all about the actors. Where in Society of the Snow, it's not necessarily all about the actors. It's more about space and I think tone and yeah. emotion than like necessarily story, where Alive was like kind of story too.
Yeah, I mean, Alive also focuses a lot on like the disagreements between Nando and mm-hmm. I forgot Fernando, the captain, right? And just like, you know, Nando was ready to just walk through those mountains to get help, like from almost the beginning of the film, as soon as he woke up from his like coma, as opposed to, I think the main moral dilemma in Society of the Snow is really focusing on this idea of cannibalism. Like, again, yes. that question of how far do we go to survive and what morality does that bring into the picture? Because like there's like an entire like 8 minute long debate that they're having amongst themselves about like the morality behind eating another person, right? Well, you don't get yeah. that in Alive as much, or at least
you really don't. Eat. No, it almost felt like they were like, no, let's not eat each other, and then they did in Alive.
Yeah.
But yeah. like, whereas in Society of the Snow, and this is a big difference, I think, when you actually have like a country like that's just not American, maybe mm-hmm. doing this film, is that Society of the Snow had way more of a moralistic and even religious mindset.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that, like...
Yeah.
Go ahead. What were you going to say?
No, because I was surprised at how much religion, though, was in Alive.
Yes, which is, you know, but... you'd find that more in a Spanish movie than you would in an American movie.
But yeah, but this is different, right? Because they were just... It was religious, but that's not the same thing as morality.
Where, no, it's not.
Yeah, whereas Society of the Snow, it was... religious morality that was being applied, right? Because they are, you know, we know South Americans, they tend to be pretty Christian influenced, right? Mm-hmm. So their decisions make sense, and their debates were around the morality around eating a person, whereas the other one was just like religious, you know, we're praying hopefully for a greater good to come and save us, right? Where this one is more like, well, what does this make us if we eat another person? That was one of the questions that they asked, right?
Yeah.
Like, what happens to our souls after that?
Yeah, and like kind of questioning, you know, their faith and spirituality really plays a part in Society of the Snow, like the strong, but it's borderline moralistic and religious, you know, like mm-hmm. I can't do this, even though these people were like pretty much dying on their last breaths, and they would mm-hmm. still, you know, like this meant so much to them.
Yeah. Well, I kind of found at times Numa insufferable, though.
Really?
I thought he was sometimes a little bit on the borderline, a little bit too, like, moral, too, like, too high-minded. It's just like, okay, like, I understand eating another person this is why I don't want to survive, right?
Yeah.
Because like,
yeah.
I don't want to have to make these decisions because I know I'll probably make them what easily. She's like, well, if I'm already here, I guess I had to eat someone. Like, this is... The cards have been dealt already, you know what I mean?
But it was pretty... Because I think when you think of cannibalism and the way that, like, people joke about it and stuff, you have, like, a different picture in your head. So when mm-hmm. I watched this, I'm like, oh, my gosh. Like, seeing how it worked in reality was just mm-hmm. like, oh, God. Like, when they would, you know, cover up that piece of skin and with, like, uh-huh. the snow and then, like, force
yeah,
to eat it.
Yeah.
I was, like, I was ready to gag.
I know. Me too. It's rough to watch. And yet, I do think, shockingly, because I remember as a kid, I thought when I was watching the new Society of the Snow, I kept thinking, it's just like, I feel like they really sensationalize the eating of the people way more than Alive. But when I rewatched it, it's just like, no, they kind of also handled that pretty delicately. Like, we don't...
Yeah, no, I thought
We don't really, like, sensationalize it. We don't really, like, it's more like a matter of fact. It happened. I think the grossest scene is, like, when you see, like, chunks of meat, like, pretty red and bloody, as they're like kind of like putting it away, you don't really get that in Society of Snow, actually. Like, anytime like they're eating something, like, the camera, for the most part, doesn't really show you much of what's happening. But we do get to see some of the brutality that comes with it, right? Like, we see the two guys, like, walking off, and then you hear them as they're, like, chopping up the bodies and stuff, right? That was a pretty rough listen. And you're not seeing anything, right? You're just hearing, because, again, we're at the point of view of the people who are just really turning a blind eye, because, again, that's one of the story, that's one of the messages in the film. It's like, they are okay with eating their friends so long as they don't know what they're eating. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah, that's the big one where it's like, if this was me, what would I do?
Again, first wave, I gotta go.
Well, there's two moments where I'm like, Jesus, it felt a little relentless. One was the avalanche that just like was never ending. It would just keep burying them over and over and caused more deaths. And in Society of the Snow, they're like playing a cute little game inside the plane. And then they're like, oh, what's that noise? And then it envelops them.
It does. So I actually prefer how Society of the Snow handled it, because in Alive, it kind of just happens. Here, you have a moment of levity, and they're kind of just like trying to just like pass the time, just trying to just have fun, right? Like, you're already in a shit situation, so like, at least let's try to not be miserable, right? For a little bit. And that's the implication there is like kind of their laughter is what sets off the avalanche, right? A little bit. And the avalanche hits, and my God, it was a brutal. That sequence is so difficult to watch. Like, the asphyxiation that you feel watching these characters like trying to dig out of the snow was, it was a crazy sequence and stuff.
Yeah, like, excuse me.
You're sneezing. Yeah, the cold is getting to you.
It really is. Yeah, I'm really feeling the atmosphere here. When they're in darkness, you're in darkness. Like, it's incredibly immersive. And like I said, a big word that I would use to describe both movies, but I would apply it a lot more to Society of the Snow, is relentless. And look, that's the way you're supposed to feel, because that's how these fucking people felt for 72 days. Mm-hmm. But like I said, for an enjoyable movie, it does not make. I guess is not the point of it. So it doesn't even matter. The other part that I would say... What?
Oh, I was going to say, like, I saw like the making of the film, right? Mm-hmm. So the vignette that like Netflix offered, and like the way they filmed that is great. Like, they actually had like the plane, and then they had like these platforms where they kind of like put fake snow, and they had to have the actors like kind of bury themselves out of, like, dig themselves out of real snow, right? So like, a lot of the reactions of them freezing and stuff is real. Like, yeah.
Wow. Like, they went really practical with it. I love that.
They went practical.
And yeah, it shows, because it feels more organic.
Mm-hmm.
The other part of both movies is just the trek, the long trek and the multiple different treks that they had to take in order to get themselves rescued. Yeah. And this is where a lot of people die, and failed attempts, and them just trying desperately days upon end to alert people that they're here in the middle of nowhere in the mountains in the freezing cold.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where a number of the characters that you've grown to love die. This is where, like, this is in, I think in Society of the Snow, this is where Numa dies, right?
Numa
it's
dies.
Been a while since I've seen this movie.
So, if we saw it from my movie club pick. No, Numa dies soon after the avalanche. He started the trek with him to go to Chile, right? But then he realized that he had a leg infection, so he couldn't. So he has to go back.
Mm.
And he dies as he's waiting. So he's the last survivor to die and whatnot. But there was a track that they did to go to the other half of the plane.
Mm-hmm.
Where to try to reconnect the battery.
Yes, the fuselage and stuff, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What is a fuselage? I keep seeing that word thrown around, and I have no idea what it is.
I know how planes...
You're just throwing this word.
It's a MacGuffin as far as I'm concerned.
the final track is after Numa dies, heading to Chile to get, hopefully to find help, right? It's like both films handle it differently. I think that's where, again, the Alive gives you some superhero heroics, right? Again, we're going for spectacle, as opposed to the Society of the Snow. It's more like your word relentless is the word that comes to mind. Like, they get hit with a snowstorm where they are just like kind of huddled together, hoping to survive. That, again, that was a brutal scene to watch. Like, you know, just like in one sleeping bag that they have made themselves to try to just like use their body heat to survive. And it's, and they're just doing this 50 long mile hike or whatever, who knows? And I don't know. Again, that's where I had to ask my, I had to pause the movie to ask Eddie. It's like, Eddie, like, do you think you have the will to kind of put yourself to do this? Like, how, what is, that's the moment that I asked myself, like, what is my will to survive? Like, I am a pampered American. My will is not that high.
Yeah. What if you, like, I mean, if I was in Nando's situation, I would want to die.
Yeah, I would. Eddie?
I think if you have something to live for, like your why, I think when at that point, it's beyond your physical capability. It's beyond your mental capability. It's like, mm-hmm. the why am I continuing on too? And I think I would just make the decision too, like that moment when they make, when one friend asks the other, will you take the trek with me? It's like, will you be there when I die? Almost like, I'm going to take this and I'm probably going to die doing it. Will you be there, mm-hmm. with me?
Yeah.
And I think there's a point where it's like, all right, I'm going to do this. I'm going to use everything that I have for us to do this. And even if I die, I can say that, well, you can't say anything, but it's knowing that you did the best that you could. So yeah. I think the why is like, who do I have? Who do I love? Who do I want to survive for?
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree with that, which is why if I was Nando and my parents were there and they were dying, or if I was Antonio or Liliana and mm-hmm. my partner dies, mm-hmm. I would give up because I wouldn't have that anymore.
Yeah. Which is interesting, right? Because like Nando, this is also a scene where you see the difference in the Nandos also, right? Like in Nando for Alive, he's a lot angrier. He's a lot more like, annoying, in my opinion. Ethan Hawke's performance of just screaming at these poor survivors as they're trying to like push through the snow. It's like, you gotta do it. You gotta do it for your families. Oh, for example, there was a scene where like the woman, you know, the wife, there's a couple, the older couple, when she dies, what's it called? He has the audacity to yell at the husband saying, forget about her. Think about your children. Be like, bro, his wife just died. All right, yeah. Because of the avalanche, like give him a break. Cut him some, like Nando's desire to live in Alive feels much more unrealistic versus the grit and determination that we saw in the Society of the Snow. Right, they just handled it differently. Right, like he wasn't as he had a will that I don't know if I could ever like dig down deep to find, but it didn't feel unrealistic. The circumstances, like how far would you go? That feels unrealistic, but like. We know he did it, right? Like it's based on a true story.
Yeah, that was harsh too, because in Alive too, when like the older couple, you know, the ones who were talking about their children, that was a scene that I thought was pretty effective, where Antonio and Liliana are like, they're thinking about their children, they're holding each other, mm-hmm. and then the avalanche comes and it's like the immediate foreshadowing gets, you know, delivered. And yet I was like, oh my God, like, that one was particularly heart-wrenching. And these movies are hard watches at the end of the day. Like, I kind of hate you for making me watch two of these. but I mean, this fucking happened. It's pretty astonishing.
Yeah. It's two different versions of the same story, right? So it's not like, so, you know, we're not official remakes, but like they're remaking the same story as far as I'm concerned.
Yes.
And it's a question of like, where are we putting, what eggs are we putting in the basket here? And so like, let's look at the, I guess, the aesthetics of the differences, right? Like, mm-hmm. like I think ultimately Society of the Snow really, really focuses its attention on, I guess, I mean, for me, it's so much more setting. Like it really is about like the location and like how.
Yeah.
empty and how vast it is and like how impossible it seems to survive, which is interesting, right? Because one of the previous films the director made was The Impossible, about that tidal wave in Thailand, Philippines, somewhere.
I'm not sure.
You ever seen the movie?
No.
I'm surprised. It's about a giant tidal wave that like hits. Naomi Watts is in it.
I know. I haven't seen it though.
Oh, I thought you liked Naomi Watts.
I don't think I've ever spoken her name to you. Are you thinking about some other white chick?
No, Nicole Kidman and Naomi Watts are like besties. That's what.
So you're confusing Nicole Kidman for Naomi Watts.
I'm not confusing her, but I thought maybe you were. As a result,
that's great.
Naomi Watts stuff.
That's great.
Even though, how would you love Nicole Kidman movies? You know, support her bestie. As opposed to Alive, where I think Alive was a lot more character driven, right? Because yeah. I will say that, like, the character driven portion of Alive works a little bit better than for me than Society of the Snow, because in Society of the Snow, even though we're following Numa and like I am building a relationship with all these characters, for some reason it doesn't click. And I don't know if it's because of the language barrier. I saw it in English. And then the second time I rewatched it, because I rewatched it again to kind of get like the Spanish feel for it.
Okay.
And I saw it in Spanish, right? Sociedad de la Nieve. And the reason I watched it in Spanish was because I want to know if like these performances hit me a little differently. And they do, but like even then maybe I was more overwhelmed by how many characters there were. Because in Live, they only focused on really three.
Which is good for telling the story. Yeah.
Of course, yeah. As opposed to Society of the Snow, where you have so many. And by the end, when they've lost so much weight, they all look the same. And they're all growing beards. You know what I mean?
It's true. Which may be to its benefit, too, because it's not really any one particular person's story. But as a viewer, it's hard because, especially, you know, when it's just a bunch of faces that you don't know and stuff, it's like, who's who? If I were to sum these two movies up in different ways, I would say Alive focuses on the triumph of the survivors, whereas Society of the Snow honors the dead. I think
that's a great way of putting it. I think that's fair.
Yeah. I think, you know, like when people die and their names appear on the screen and the fact that the whole story is narrated from one of the people who are deceased, I think this film is more aware of the tragedy and like really, really the heart goes out to those who deceased because of this. Mm-hmm. Whereas Society of the Snow, I mean, Alive, it's just like, how do they get out of this? You know, how do they kind of stay alive? Which is great, and it's all about pushing forward and the triumph of that. But there's something more, I think, because of this whole like more religious mindset and spiritual, there's more of like an awareness of, you know, the fragility of life and just, yeah, the turmoil of it all was more prominent in Society of the Snow.
Yeah. I do know the other thing is like, you know, those like closing sequences where you're seeing like their bodies and like how...
Yeah.
These 70-something days have just ravaged them. So I haven't gotten confirmation yet if that was CGI because I couldn't tell if it was CGI or if it was their bodies. But I do know the director did film this in sequential order.
Oh, my God.
Because the actors were losing weight. They were on strict diets during the making of the film.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense that they would have to. They would have to shoot in order to show the body change. Wow, okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah, now I want to watch this making of, actually.
Oh, you should. It's worth
it. Yeah, it was pretty good. It's like 30-something minutes.
Oh, nice. Okay. Yeah, that sounds really intriguing. And if they show a lot of the filmmaking techniques, I'm definitely going to watch
it. Oh, yeah, it's great. I mean, you know, they show like how they brought that like fake plane prop into the Andes and stuff. Would you just drop it into place? And then they had a second set where, like, it's like a lot in like Granada that they built where they had like, they just like put like fake snow around it and stuff. So it was like, but it was like, and that's the other thing I appreciate. I mean, you know, we've been doing this podcast for so long and you know how much I've just become like so anti CGI. And it's like, this is a movie that just does as much as possible to not rely on CGI.
Yeah.
Right.
And except those always are going to get stronger emotional reactions.
Of course. Yeah. 1,000,000%. Outside of the color grading, I think it was like my favorite thing. I was just, for some reason, we talked about this before, like in the movie club, but like there was something about the color grading that they chose that just like made it too digital for me. It was just driving me crazy, in my opinion. But that's not to say, like, that is like me nitpicky. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I do know they filmed, the editing was on Premiere because like the director was in front of the editing suite and it was like on Premiere.
That's great to know. Wow. So not media composer.
Premiere. No, not media composer. It was definitely Premiere.
Wow. Did you know Everything Everywhere All at Once was edited on Premiere?
No, I didn't know that. That's crazy. That's because that's a good movie. That's an intense movie to edit.
Yep. All on Premiere.
Pretty sweet.
Yeah. Sorry. Editing talk.
I know.
I don't know. I mean, should we ask like one of our top questions comparing these two movies? You know, was this needed? Like, I don't know. That feels... inappropriate in a weird way.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's not necessarily... Okay. Do you think this story needed to get retold?
I don't know if it... I'm going to say no, honestly, because okay. It sounds like there's been many books, mm-hmm. many documentaries, and there's been a lot out there in terms of the story of these survivors.
Right.
But do I think this movie needed to be maybe remade? Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yes, I know what you mean. I think for sure, for me, it's about having it in like the language of which these actual people were speaking at the time, right? That does make a difference. And seeing these, I mean, not to say that like all films that have like name actors take me away from the story, but there is something about having no name actors.
Yeah.
And you know, falling into yeah. those roles and stuff that does also make a difference for sure.
Absolutely. I mean, it was less distracting for me, so... Mm. Did you know that this filmmaker directed one of the Jurassic Worlds, by the way? The one who directed
Sign
of the Snow? Yeah.
I did know. Yeah. He has like a mixed bag of things.
Yeah.
Like, great film. I love this one. But I did see his resume and I was just like, oh, this is like some interesting choices. How do you go from Jurassic World to this?
I know. Yeah. Well, he's Spanish. So I guess this was more so like the film he was able to make in his country where he comes to America and he does the assignment films.
He did Dominion, right?
No, he did Fallen Kingdom.
Oh, the last one?
No, Fallen Kingdom was not the last one. It was the second one.
Was the last one. That's the second one?
Yeah.
Arguably the worst one, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, that was not good. Dominion was the last one, so.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know.
Do you think it's going to win Best Makeup?
I don't know what it's up against. Do you know?
I think I could tell you. So it is up against Golda, which I have not seen.
Never heard of it even.
Maestro, which I have seen, and some of that elderly makeup they put on Bradley Cooper, it's pretty impressive.
You think it's just a nose, really, that like got that nomination?
Maybe. Oppenheimer, of course. Poor Things.
What makeup was in Oppenheimer?
Yeah, the aging and whatnot. I don't think Oppenheimer should win, but of course it's nominated because they're fucking jacking off this damn movie.
I saw the movie also got nominated for best costume. It's just like, what costume?
They wore suits.
I know. Yeah.
It was so convincingly 1945.
Like, oh my God.
Yeah. Poor Things and then Society of the Snow. I mean, I've seen four of these five films and I absolutely think Society of the Snow should win.
More so than Poor Things?
I think Poor Things should win costume and like set design.
Oh, I don't know. But... I saw some of the makeups on like from just like some of the commercials and like clips that I've seen here and there. The makeup on some of the things that I've seen for Poor Things is pretty good.
But I think makeup, that's its real competition. Yeah.
The makeup though, for sure, is really good in this film for sure. I mean, you know.
Oh yeah, no, it's
they
great.
They highlight the weight loss and stuff for sure, and like the bruising and all that stuff. They really did a great job.
Yeah.
I do agree with you. I think it should have been nominated, though, for, like, sound editing or sound mixing or sound production.
Mm-hmm. No, I think it should have. I think so. They actually got rid of sound editing and sound mixing. Now it's just best sound, which is kind of bullshit.
Just best sound.
Yeah. Jeez. And Oppenheimer was nominated, which for that it should be, but Society of the Snow was not.
Are you excited for next year's new category?
Which one again? Best.
Isn't it Best Ensemble?
Mm.
Or Best Casting?
Best casting, yeah, because so many of the Academy members are casting directors, so yeah.
That's I don't know. That seems like such a silly... I prefer an ensemble. Like, Golden Globes has that, right? Like, the best ensemble, which is just like, okay, as a whole, how did this work?
No, that's the SAG Awards, because it's SAG? Acting. No, Golden Globes doesn't have that. But you know what they should do? They should do, like, stunts or something. They should recognize lower-level people.
They should do stunts. They should focus more on some more technical and stuff.
Yeah.
I am
silly.
It is silly. And so, especially, I also do think that like we should put more push. I like for best costume, for example, like is that like something that you see in the actual award show? Because like I feel like it's such a shame that like a lot of like practical effects are now just being done obviously by CGI, including like some of that stuff that could have been makeup.
Oftentimes,
it's just relegated to just CGI. And that's why I'm actually so excited that like one of my favorite shows is getting a revival. What's it? Eddie, what's our show? The makeup show.
Face Off?
Face Off is coming.
Ooh.
They're working on it, and I cannot wait, because I think that's such an art form.
Is that the one with Ding Dong?
Ding Dong?
What's the British show where the woman goes ding dong and everyone's like, I got a ding dong. You don't know that show?
I don't think so.
That's something.
Oh my gosh. And Katya now does that makeup show ding dong.
Oh, is that like
Glow Up? It's in Glow Up.
No, no. Face Off is like actual practical effects. Like they make monsters.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's such a good show.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, next time you are listening to this podcast, you will hear whether or not Society of the Snow won. So stay tuned for that. And if you are still listening, please, please, please reach out to us. Ways that you can reach out to us, email us, remakesrebootsrevivals@gmail.com. You can hit us up on Instagram at remakesrebootsrevivals. Hit us up on Twitter at remakespodcast. If you search for us on Facebook or YouTube, just search Remakes Reboots Revivals and we will come up. And if you're listening on a podcasting platform, please go to our main page and give us a rating. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, please give us a review. And if you are interested in listening to past episodes, all the way to the first Lost in Space 2018, go to Podbean and you'll be able to search every single episode we've ever done.
Or you can go to www.remakesrebootsrevivals.com where they live also.
So many options. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Well, that's it for this week. Excited for our next topic, which is not going to be a movie. It's going to be a TV series, one that just got dropped on Netflix. So
I'm sure you guys air can dropped.
Hey, that didn't give it away at all.
I mean, we know what it's going to be. So
like, yeah.
Get people amped up. Maybe they'll watch it and come back to listen and stuff. Also watch the Night Shyamalan movie because we're going to have to.
Oh my God, that's right. Oh, why did you have to remind me of that?
Have you seen it? God.
I saw it in theaters.
Oh, you saw it in theaters?
Yeah, I saw it in theaters.
I can't believe that. I have not seen it yet.
Oh, yeah. No, I was excited for it because I love the original piece. So we're just going to dance around it. Just not tell them what that is. But yeah, see the M. Night Shyamalan film if you really, really want to.
If you want to get the full breadth of this episode that's coming up.
Yes. So until next time, stay unoriginal.